Hello, welcome along. It's that time of the week where we're getting itchy feet. Life is a bit boring down here on planet Earth, so let's head across the universe. Welcome along to the Fun Kids Science Weekly. My name is Dan. This is the show that explores all the science secrets lurking through the solar system. Now, this week, we've got an incredible guest. Someone who has won a competition to go shark diving with Steve Backshall for a brand new TV show.
So I've always been taught that sharks are just these killing machines, and obviously society has drilled that into most young people. But actually being in there in the water, and the sharks weren't aggressive and they weren't trying to come up towards us. Most of them didn't even notice us in the water in with them. And I think it's just learning how to behave around them.
Also, we'll take a trip to Deep Space High, the smartest school in the solar system, to hear all about why different languages are important for space exploration.
Who'd like to share their interests? Go on, Pling.
Well, languages are pretty fun. I learned how to speak Torquetian last month so I could join in with the chat on a video game I bought.
Was it difficult?
Nah, I completed the game in a week.
And I've got your questions to answer. This week they are on weather forecasts and why some dinosaurs didn't eat meat. Turns out a lot of them didn't. We'll find out in a brand new Fun Kids Science Weekly. Let's kick things off with your science in the news. The sea ice surrounding Antarctica is well below any previous level recorded in winter, new satellite data shows. It's very worrying that the sea ice is melting around there because the ice does a brilliant job all around the world. If it melts, not only will sea levels rise, but also that ice kind of keeps the planet cool. The white surface reflects the sun's energy back into the atmosphere. Now, without that, it means Antarctica would go from being the Earth's refrigerator to a radiator. It would make everything much warmer. That is very bad news and just another sign of this climate crisis we're in. Also, Google's artificial intelligence firm DeepMind has used AI to identify changes in human DNA that might cause diseases. This is brilliant. Scientists have used AI to try and detect key parts of diseases that we're not really sure of yet. And this is very important because it can help doctors speed up diagnosis and help in search for better treatments to diseases that we can't quite cure yet. So this is one way that AI, artificial intelligence, is very smart and can help us out. And also, an almost complete dinosaur skeleton will be sold at auction in Paris next month. It is a Camptosaurus. It was discovered about 30 years ago in the state of Wyoming over in America. It is 150 million years old. It's called Barry, named after Barry James, who's the paleontologist who found it. Experts say that the skeleton is extremely well preserved and it could fetch over $1 million when it's sold at an auction in October. So if you've got a few pennies knocking around and you know, just over $1 million, well, head to France next month. You can buy yourself a almost complete dinosaur skeleton. Let's catch up with Techno Mum then. She's one of our favourite geniuses on the show. She knows everything about gadgets and engineering and why things that you use work the way that they do. And she's been joining us for the last few weeks with her son, gadget son, techno son, Tim. And this week we're learning all about space launches and how footage from a space launch gets to your telly using super satellites.
Techno Mum, with the Institution of Engineering and Technology, advancing and sharing technology.
I never normally miss Turbo Gadgets. It's my favourite TV show. I definitely didn't want to miss it yesterday. It was showing a live rocket launch from Florida. A new probe was being sent to Mars. How cool is that?
Tim, it's starting now. They're about to do the countdown.
Coming. Tilly was hogging the toilet.
He was just saying they expect 500 million people across the world to be watching this launch. You do want to be one of them, don't you?
The rocket burst into life, the flames surging underneath as they counted down. Then the stays fell away. Then up she went with those jets roaring all the way on her journey to Mars. Just the coolest thing ever.
Whoa, that is so cool. And I was one of the people who actually saw it, right as it was happening.
Just.
It's pretty amazing we can see the launch live. How do they send the pictures to us in an instant like that?
It's all done with something else that's flying around up in space, like that rocket. Artificial satellites.
A satellite is something that orbits the Earth, isn't it?
Yep. And artificial ones are those that are put there by us humans. Bits of rock in orbit don't count. There are thousands of satellites up there, helping to make it really simple to pass stuff around like words, pictures, computer data, all sorts.
But they orbit thousands of miles above our heads. They're so far away. How can it be easier to use satellite?
It might be thousands of miles up to the satellite, probably around 20,000 miles for a TV one. But there's nothing in the way. No trees, hills, oceans or earth to burrow through. Would it be easier to throw a ball in the air or push it through a pile of earth?
Oh, right. So it's like an amazing shortcut.
That's right, like the launch just now. The pictures from the launch site were uplinked or sent in radio waves up to a satellite. The satellite beamed them back down to downlink stations in different parts of the Earth, where they could be made into the television programme we saw.
I was beginning to think it would be cool if people could travel on radio waves. We could fly to any point on Earth in an instant. It sounds super speedy. So what else can be beamed around the planet?
All sorts. Stuff we use every day, like telephone calls and computer data. And that reminds me of something you've done yourself. Skype. You remember, we Skyped Great Uncle Bernard in Australia at Christmas.
Skype is like a video phone call on your computer. It's amazing because you can see the other person whilst you're having a conversation. Shame in a way, as Uncle Bernard had got breakfast on his moustache and Mum was too polite to say anything. Oh yeah, so the pictures and sounds from that call were bouncing off satellites. I thought the internet came from cables or over radio waves from transmitters.
It uses all sorts. Often a mixture of ways. Enough satellites for one day. I've got to get the sausages on for tea.
Excellent.
And you're peeling the spuds for the mash.
Less excellent.
Technomum, with the Institution of Engineering and Technology. Advancing and sharing technology.
Let's answer some of your questions then. I love this part of the show. If you have anything sciencey you want answered on this podcast, make sure you leave it as a voice note for me. You can do that by clicking on the free Fun Kids app, which is really easy to get. You click record a message while you're there, record yourself, let me know your name and I will answer your question. Like this one, who is it today?
How does weather forecasts work? Bye.
All right, Clement, how do weather forecasts work then? There are three very important stages to a weather forecast, where scientists will look ahead to try and predict what the weather's going to be like tomorrow, in a week, even 2 weeks sometimes. Three important stages then. You need to know what the weather is doing now, you need to calculate how this will change in the future, and then you need to use expertise to refine the details. So in order to know what weather's like in the future, we need to know very precisely what it's doing right now. Recordings of weather and how it's changing are being made all the time, all around the world, with different weather stations that are tracking rainfall, snowfall, the atmosphere in the air. We use satellite pictures as well. So we get a really keen idea of what our world looks like and what is the weather is doing right now. Then we can put that data into these huge supercomputers who has got like every single recorded weather ever on it. So it knows that if the weather is like this today, well, here's what it might be like this tomorrow, because here's what it's been like before. So they kind of put the puzzle together of what the weather today means for the weather in the next week. And these computer models are run right throughout the day, all the time. They're always predicting, they're always changing. And then you get experts, proper people who have studied weather and meteorology, and they know what different signs are pointing towards. So if the atmospheric pressure is like this, what that might mean. And they use that, and they're always changing it and tweaking it to figure out what the weather forecast is. Clement, thank you so much for the question. Here is one that was left as a review for the Fun Kids Science Weekly on Apple Podcasts. Thank you so much, Nolan, who wants to know, why are some dinosaurs meat eaters and others stuck to plants? Here's what's incredible. We think of dinosaurs as being these like brutal beasts who just tore away at any meat that they could find. But many, many dinosaurs were herbivores, plant eaters, much more than carnivores. Very simply because there was a lot of plants around. evolution means that creatures that do well and thrived have more chance of keeping their species going, right? So if you're a dinosaur back then, and you could eat plants that just grew naturally on the floor and were all around you, as opposed to waiting for prey to catch, you'd stand a good chance of thriving. Thing is, meat was much easier to digest. So if you're a big animal, you need things from meat as well that perhaps you can't get from plants. You need a lot of energy. You could eat thousands of plants a day or some prey. What would take you less time? Experts know that dinosaurs were either carnivores or herbivores because of teeth fossils. They can tell what they were made for, either slicing and cutting for meat or chewing and grinding for plants. Nolan, thank you so much for the question. If you have anything that you want answered next week on the show, I'd really love to hear it. As you starring on the show, you can do that by leaving a voice note for me on the free Fun Kids app or at funkidslive.com. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. And one of the world's greatest adventurers is back with a brand new show. And this time, Steve Backshaw is diving into the ocean with Deadly Mission Shark. He is taking 10 kids on a journey of shark conservation with him. And Eloise is one of them, who joins us now. Eloise, thank you for being there.
No problem.
So, Eloise, just tell us about you before doing this incredible thing with Steve. So, like, whereabouts are you from? How old are you? What do you love doing at school and all of that stuff?
I'm from Northern Ireland in Ards, and I'm 15 years old, and I've always wanted to do marine biology, especially shark biology. I take lots of subjects in school, especially biology, geography, and all the other sciences. I love paddleboarding and riding horses, and I'm really passionate about conservation, especially shark conservation.
So it's kind of all the perfect makings to be an adventurer, really. Paddleboarding, horse riding, you love conservation. When did you first hear that there was an opportunity to learn and have this incredible experience with Steve Backshaw?
I actually saw a video on TikTok asking for 12 to 14 year olds who were confident swimmers and who wanted to go to the Bahamas to dive with sharks. So I jumped at the opportunity and filled in an application.
And how did you feel when you found out you had been picked and that you were going?
At first, I really didn't believe it because it was such a strange situation. How would I be going to the Bahamas to dive with sharks with Steve Backshaw? But as it started to sink in, I got really excited because it was a dream come true. Because obviously I've always wanted to be a marine biologist that specializes in sharks. And I've been begging my parents for ages to let me go diving with sharks.
It's really amazing, isn't it? When you hear about these competitions that are out there, as you say, you found about it on TikTok and like meeting someone who has won that. It's like a lottery win. It's so amazing to be chatting to you. So just talk us what you remember of day one of your adventure out there. You land, you're in the Bahamas. What are you doing? What are you learning? When do you get to go and see some sharks?
So first of all, we all got into our house. It was a really nice beach house. And I got talking to everybody and all the crew. And it was really warm. It was a bit of a shock from the UK to the Bahamas. And then we eventually went out to go diving, and we went out on a boat called the Bimini Blue, and we went out to a dive spot that was called the Strip, and we got our scuba gear on and went in. But unfortunately, I wasn't able to equalize my ears, which means I wasn't able to stop them hurting when I went down. So I wasn't able to get down that day, but I did eventually get down.
That must have been so annoying. You know, you're so excited to get down. So it's so brilliant that you were able to do that. And what was learning about sharks like up close and very personal with actual Steve Backshaw? He knows a lot. What did he tell you? How did he teach you?
He told us a lot about all the different types of sharks and how to behave around them. And I think one of the most important things about swimming with sharks is knowing how to adapt to different shark species. He told us that nurse sharks were quite calm and docile. They were actually the first type of shark we dived with on the show. And then they contrast with bull sharks because they're bigger and more aggressive. And we were told lots of different fun facts, like lemon sharks actually have best friends. And it was really cool learning from the best of the best with all the marine biologists and Steve himself.
Because this was a 10-day boot camp, wasn't it? And it's not just you reading books and listening to what Steve's saying. You had to do some tasks along the way. So tell us about some of the brilliant ones that you did.
So we did lots of different tasks, and some of them were on land and some of them were in the sea. So we did a BioBlitz challenge, and I was in a team with two boys, David and Daniel, and we were racing to see how many species we could get. The other team were in a forest, and we were at the beach, and we were collecting as many species as we could, which was really fun. And we had a lot of different dives we got to do. We had to complete 4 training dives before we were able to swim with sharks. And I got to do some school visit. And at the boot camp, the 3-day boot camp in the UK before we went, we had to jump off a 6-meter cliff into freezing water and abseiled on a bridge.
6 meters, that's really high. And into freezing water as well. I know how hard it must be to try and catch your breath. The thing is with sharks, I think a lot of people are scared of them because we don't really understand them. How much has doing this with Steve out in the Bahamas changed your idea of how we can perhaps make everyone else aware of the fact that not all sharks are out to try and eat you?
So I've always been taught that sharks are just these killing machines, and obviously society has drilled that into most young people through things like social media posts, which tend to exaggerate, but we always seem to believe them anyway. And the movie Jaws is quite an infamous movie, and it made everyone really scared of sharks. But actually being in there in the water, and the sharks weren't aggressive and they weren't trying to come up towards us. Most of them didn't even notice us in the water in with them. And I think it's just learning how to behave around them, because if you can behave properly, there are barely any non-provoked attacks. 100 million sharks are killed every single year by us, but I think it's only 6 or 7 people that get killed by sharks every year, mostly because of irresponsible or freak accidents.
It's always worth remembering, you mentioned the film Jaws. That was based on a book, and the guy who wrote the book was so shocked at the damage that he'd done to how people view sharks that he dedicated the rest of his life to shark conservation. So it's always worth remembering that, I think, if you are a little bit scared of sharks. Now, going forward, you said that one of the reasons you applied is because you love conservation, particularly with sharks. It's what you want to do when you're older. How much has this experience made that a possibility for you? How much has it let you know what you can do when you're older for a job, and how maybe you can do it too?
I think it helps now that I have my PADI scuba diving license, so I'm able to tell people who might want to hire me I've got that. And it's also given me a deeper understanding of what the job would be like. It's made me a lot more excited for it, like I wasn't already excited. And it's just let me get a dip into the world of sharks. I know a lot more about them, and I think it'll be a lot easier for me to get a job in marine biology now.
You said right at the start as well that you kind of have been pestering your mum and dad a bit to take you diving and everything, and they were never keen. How has it been since you got back? I imagine you just want to go straight there again. How are they getting on with someone who wants to be in the Bahamas on a beach scuba diving every day now?
I actually managed to persuade them to let me do my advanced open water diving course. So that means I can dive in a dry suit, so I can actually dive in the UK without getting freezing in the water, unlike the Bahamas. But if I ever go on holiday, I think I'll be pestering them so I can get diving there as well.
The show is Deadly Mission Shark. Just, Eloise, tell us why we should watch it. Why is this such a special program and adventure to be part of?
I think people should watch Deadly Mission Shark because it really shows sharks in a different light to what we're being raised to believe through movies, news, and social media. They've gained a really bad reputation, and these things really aren't accurate. They're really adding more fuel to the fire. And I think if kids that are my age, 12 to 14, and they can swim with sharks and come out unharmed, then I think anyone should be able to swim with sharks and not be scared. I think you just need to get over your fear and realise they're not all that bad. And I also think Deadly Mission Shark is quite funny and a really enjoyable watch.
Eloise, I'm so pleased that you got to do this with Steve. I am incredibly jealous as well, but it's been a real, real treat to talk to you. So thank you so much for coming on.
No problem.
Let's get to this week's Dangerous Dan, where we look at some of the most mean, wicked and strange things in the universe. And this week, we're looking at one very cunning creature, which tricks its way to a large, brutal meal. The large blue caterpillar is found all over the UK and all over the world, really. They grow to just over a centimetre long when they're a caterpillar before they spend 9 months in metamorphosis, becoming a beautiful butterfly. Now, when they're a caterpillar, they have an incredible way of getting food. They are a disguise artist. The caterpillar falls to the ground near a red ant nest and waits for one to find them, an adult red ant. They manage to trick it into thinking they are a red ant baby, one that has escaped the nest. It does this by twisting their body, by releasing a sweet smell that ant babies do, right? So then they get taken into their nest. They've tricked their way in. They're like a spy. After a few months, still in disguise, this caterpillar will wait. It will get fed and cared for. And then when it gets big enough, it goes to work. It eats the other ant babies that it's lived with. It becomes that caterpillar and destroys everything. It also devours the worker ant mums and dads that have cared for it along the way. How brutal and how brilliant is nature sometimes. This creature is so cunning, so amazing, it can pretend to be another animal for ages to sneak its way to a big meal. And that is why the large blue caterpillar goes straight onto our Dangerous Dan list. Before we finish up this week, let's get a lesson from Deep Space High, the smartest school in the solar system. This is from our Space for All series, where we're travelling up there with Professor Pulsar and the gang. We're learning about the different types of careers that you can do in space exploration, because it's not just about being an astronaut. This week, we're finding out what jobs you can get in space if you love different languages.
Deep Space High, Space for All.
Deep Space High, the school is space. But hurry, because lessons are about to begin.
Morning, everyone. Today, we're going to carry on looking at the different jobs that people do in space. And remember, it's not all about being rocket scientists or doing loads of sums. Space is for everyone, whatever your interests. Who'd like to share their interests? Go on, Pling.
Well, languages are pretty fun. I learned how to speak Torquetian last month so I could join in with the chat on a video game I bought.
Was it difficult?
Nah, I completed the game in a week. Oh, you meant the language. It was pretty easy. There's only 10 words in the whole language. They mostly communicate in smell.
So what did learning Torquetian enable you to do?
Well, I couldn't have joined in if I didn't know how to communicate. I didn't want to be left out.
That's a good point. Being able to communicate with others, wherever they come from, is an important everyday skill. And especially so when it comes to space. And to help demonstrate this, computer sim, Baikonur Cosmodrome, please. Welcome to Kazakhstan. The Baikonur Cosmodrome is the largest operational space launch facility on Earth. And for many years, the only way to get to the International Space Station was by hitching a ride on a Russian ship, namely a Soyuz craft. So anyone wanting to visit the ISS had to brush up on their Russian.
I don't get it, sir. My dad's got a BMW. That's a German car. But he doesn't have to speak German to drive it.
I very much doubt your dad's going into orbit in his BMW, Sam. Being able to share a common language helps to ensure the safety of any crew. Astronauts travelling on Soyuz don't just learn a few words, they must be able to understand technical jargon too. It can take hundreds of hours of lessons. Sometimes astronauts stay with Russian families to practice their skills.
So maybe I could teach astronauts Russian?
Well, certainly Russian has been very important. And remember, Russian astronauts will have learned to speak English. Things, though, can change, and rocket launches might start to be more commonplace in other countries, such as China, India, and even from Britain.
I imagine astronauts come from nations all across Earth, right?
That's right. There's a whole range of languages one might hear on the International Space Station. As well as speaking in different languages, things like documents, manuals, signs, even food menus, they all need to be translated into different languages. Okay, end sim, computer. And once in space, language experts could be part of exploration in a very exciting way. There's a chance that there's unknown life out there who might be trying to communicate with us.
Yeah, I think there's something mouldy in Quark's lunchbox that's a whole new life form.
Their communication might be spoken words or sounds or written as symbols or even something totally different, like the Tausitian smell language.
That was weird.
Linguists, that's people who are specialists in languages, analyse these communications to crack the code and understand the message. Many languages have things in common, such as words for objects and for actions. The more languages you learn and study, the easier it is to see the patterns. Is that something you might like to do, Sam?
I think I'll stick to computer language.
Fair enough. Well, that's the end of today's lesson. We'll look at more of your favourite things next time and see how space really is for all. Even you, Sam. Class dismissed.
Deep space high. Space for all. With support from the UK Space Agency. Find out more at funkidslive.com/space.
That's it for this week's Fun Kids Science Weekly. If you want a science question answered next week on the show, you can leave it as a voice note for me on the free Fun Kids app or at funkidslive.com. You've heard some podcast series today. We've got loads more that you can get on Google, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your shows. They're on the free Fun Kids app too. And Fun Kids, we are a children's radio station from the UK. Listen all over the country on your DAB digital radio or at funkidslive.com or on your smart speaker. Just wake it up and say play Fun Kids.